continue now with the next installment of the lengthy tale of how Reb Boruch, the father of the Alter Rebbe, became a chassid of the Baal Shem Tov. You will recall that in the previous installment, we related how Reb Boruch became friendly with Reb Yitzchok Shol, the son of Reb Nissen, who told him about Derech HaChassidus, and this became a Mira Derech. It began to open up Reb Boruch's eyes in the path of Avedas Hashem, something in the path of divine service, something that he was seeking all his life through, and finally he felt that he had come to an understanding of something which would be able to serve him well for the rest of his life. We now continue the tale. Boruch and his new friend Reb Yitzchok Shol took a great liking to each other, and their friendship blossomed as they grew closer day by day. It was from Yitzchok Shol that Boruch, for the first time, learned about Rabbi Odom Baal Shem Tov, who was the precursor to Rabbi Yisrael Baal Shem Tov, as well as learning about Rabbi Yisrael Baal Shem Tov, who at that time was already the head of Adas HaChassidim. He was the head of the Hasidic movement. The history that Rabbi Yitzchok Shol related of his father Reb Nissen was also the history of Hasidim to that time. Rabbi Yitzchok Shol, who followed in his father's footsteps, was himself a living example of the Hasidic way of life. And as he spoke to Boruch, with all the hislavos, with all the fire and all the enthusiasm of his deep-seated convictions, Boruch was indescribably moved and fiercely impressed. Boruch had been earnestly seeking the Derech HaEmes, the true way of Torah and Avodas Hashem, service of God, but up until that point, he had met with little success. And now he suddenly realized that he was face to face with a Jewish path of life which was harmoniously complete, both as regard the study of Torah and Avodas Hashem, learning and deed, a life where mind and heart acted in perfect harmony. So Boruch swallowed greedily every word he heard from Rabbi Yitzchok Shol about his father's association with the first Hasidic Mekubolim, the first Hasidic mystics, and of the way they spread Hasidus among the populace. After Reb Nissen had been 6 months in the secret Hasidic group in Minsk, Reb Nissen became acquainted with two remarkable personalities of the elder Hasidim. One was Reb Mordechai of Dubrovne, and the other was Reb Yitzchok of Manastrichne. Both men were famous in their respective communities, having succeeded their fathers as the Rabbonim, the spiritual leaders of their respective communities. Reb Mordechai's father was the Goyin Reb Chaim, the great Torah scholar Reb Chaim, and Reb Yitzchok's father was the Goyin Reb Binyamin Segel. Both became Mekubolim, Hasidic mystics, and wandered from town to town, sowing the seeds of Hasidic teachings and establishing in each place small groups of Hasidim to further teach and spread Hasidus to ever more Jews. It was to these two mystics that Rabbi Nissim attached himself, and together with them wandered from place to place. During their wanderings, they eventually reached the town of Harki, where after much effort, they managed to establish a Hasidic group. They decided that Rabbi Nissen should remain in Harki in order to strengthen the Hasidic movement there and be the leader of the newly formed Hasidic group. Rabbi Nissen married the daughter of a respected local citizen, and after a year, they were blessed with a son, whom they named Yitzchok Shol. For 10 years, Rabbi Nissen carried on with his Chassidic activities in Harki. He often received ksovim, manuscripts, detailing the further developments of Chassidism, brought to him personally by special messengers. Harki thus became an important center of Chassidism, and the number of its adherents grew, and the Chassidic influence was felt in the entire surrounding district. As we know, Rav Nissen earned his living by teaching, Rav Nissen Melamed as he was known, but he was also found time occasionally to join various Chassidim in their wanderings for the purpose of spreading the teachings of the Chassidic way of life. During the course of time, the leadership of the movement was handed down from Rabbi Odom Baal Shem to Rabbi Yisrael Baal Shem Tov. Rav Nissen later had an opportunity of visiting the Baal Shem Tov and becoming his Talmud. Thus he followed the whole development of Chassidism from the time when it was first introduced by the Mekubal, the mystic Rabbi Odom Baal Shem, until the day of the already well-known Rabbi Yisrael Baal Shem Tov at the height of his fame. When Yitzchak Shol was a young boy, he knew nothing of Chassidism. His father evidently felt that he was not ready yet to be taught about the secret new movement. He wanted him, first of all, to become a diligent Torah student and learn to live ethically. He therefore sent him to the yeshiva at Minsk, at the same time putting him in contact with some of his old friends there, who were all secretly living the life of Chassidim. The young Yitzchak Shol found much to interest him and admire in his association with his father's friends. But it was not until he returned home to Harki that he learned of their Hasidic affiliation. By this time, the new doctrines of Hasidism were beginning to be openly taught in Harki, and Rav Nissen began little by little to open his son's eyes to all that Hasidus meant and stood for. This briefly was the story Rabbi Yitzchak Shol told Baruch of his father. Now it was his turn to do for his friend what his father had done for him. Baruch eagerly listened to all that Rabbi Yitzchak Shol had to tell him about Chassidus, which was so new to Baruch. Rabbi Yitzchak Shol's way of life was also new to Baruch. His original approach to life and his easy and logical grasp of the essentials in life, his attitudes towards his fellow man, particularly towards ordinary folk, just called for the highest admiration in the Baruch. Baruch had a good opportunity of making a comparison between Yitzchak Shol and his two learned brothers-in-law and seeing the difference between their outlook. He happened to be by when Rabbi Moshe Leib was telling his brother-in-law, Rabbi Yitzchak Shol, what a surprise he had had in the Beis HaMedrash. Rabbi Moshe Leib had been listening to two young boys studying Gemara together and was greatly impressed by their brilliance. "Imagine my astonishment," said Moshe Leib, "when on asking the boys who they were, they told me they were the sons of Zvulun Binyamin, the skinner of carcasses, and of Yisrael Shmuel, the joiner. I could not help from thinking that these boys so aptly exemplified the saying, 'Mi yitin tor mitome,' who will bring forth clean out of unclean, which our sages tell us refer to Avram, the son of Terach. Now, here we have such coarse material as Zvulun Binyamin and Yisrael Shmuel," he continued, "and yet they have such fine and clever sons." His tone was so cold and dispassionate, as if he had been speaking of something quite ordinary, and he did not realize the contradiction in his own words. Baruch saw his friend Yitzchak Shol for the first time become absolutely incensed. Yitzchak Shol shook with fury as he turned upon his brother-in-law and positively shouted the words at him, "How dare you indulge in such sinful talk? You are truly insulting fine people. This particular Yisrael Shmuel, of whom you speak so slightingly, is a great Talmud Chochmi, is a great Torah scholar, I would have you know. Because he does not flaunt his knowledge in the eyes of people, very few know about it. I myself only discovered the fact by accident. servant. I am, however, a witness to the fact that he knows all Seder Nezikin, the order of Nezikin, and Shulchan Aruch HaRechayim. He knows every page and every line of Seder Nezikin by heart. Can you name me any of the brilliant young Torah scholars who know the whole Seder Nezikin by heart? And you know that this same humble joiner is constantly rehearsing what he has studied in the Torah while he is at his work? As for this Zvulun Binyamin, for whom you continually show so much contempt, and you can find no other name for him other than the skinner of carcasses, I would have you know that he conducts himself like a true tzaddik in his simplicity and sincerity. Yitzchok Shaul had much more to say about people like his brother-in-law, who looked down upon simple and uneducated people instead of doing something to raise them to a higher educational level. He then related how it came about that he discovered what a remarkable scholar the apparently simple joiner Yisrael Shmuel was. There was a Porutz by the name of Zigizismund Kivechki, who lived near the Bromshul, who wanted a special kind of sleigh, similar to one he had seen at the home of another Porutz, whose name was Joseph Shivenitsky, whose estate was near Lubavitch. This particular sleigh was built in such a way that it could be used in the deepest falls of snow. Many nobles used this kind of sleigh for hunting in their forests in the wintertime. They were broader and stronger than other sleighs. So this Kivikshitsky sent for the smith Eliezer Ruvain and his son-in-law Yitzchok Shaul, as well as for the joiner Yisrael Shmuel. When they arrived, he provided them with a special carriage to make the journey to the estate of the nobleman, Joseph Shevenitsky, so that they could examine his sleigh and make one for him exactly like it. Yisrael Shmuel set about preparing the woodwork involved, while Eliezer Ruvain and his son-in-law attended to the work which called for a smith. It was a task which lasted for weeks, and the three of them were constantly together. Thus it happened that Yitzchok Shaul was struck by the fact that Yisrael Shmuel was constantly singing to himself while working, and he seemed to be singing words which had a familiar ring. Yitzchok Shaul then gave a more attentive ear to what he was hearing, and found, to his astonishment, that the joiner was actually quoting by heart from the Gemara, page after page after page, without a stop. Yitzchok Shaul then knew without a doubt what a scholar was in their midst. And you wish to imply that were he not the great scholar we have discovered him to be, he would not merit the absolute respect to which every decent person is entitled, concluded Yitzchok Shaul challengingly. Baruch's conviction grew that the Hasidim, which his friend represented, was in truth a novel and a very fine way of serving Hashem. The more Baruch paid attention to the discussions that so often took place between Yitzchok Shaul and his brothers-in-law, the more he recalled the differences in their outlook. On the one hand was the new way of life that was followed by Yitzchok Shaul, and on the other, the old well-trodden path which the other two followed. Baruch took particular notice of the way they all behaved in their relations towards their fellows. While Yitzchok Shaul had a ready smile and a friendly word for everyone, be he a scholar or a plain workman, his two brothers-in-law definitely showed that they had no use at all for anyone but scholars. In fact, they did not hide their contempt for anyone they considered ignorant and beneath them. Baruch was especially impressed with a certain occasion when a neighbor of the smith's came in to have a chat with him. This man was a gardener named Ezra Yehuda, a very decent fellow, but of course a workman, not a scholar. He was telling his friend the news of the town, and Ezra Reuven the smith was quite interested. His two elder sons-in-law happened to be present and looked rather displeased at the way Ezra Yehuda seemed to be making himself at home, chatting freely to their father-in-law. Then they heard the gardener relating something about the Rav, and that seemed to set the spark to their smoldering resentment, and they blazed forth in a rage. Stop! talking our heads off, the elder one shouted. You keep to your cucumbers and parsnips, and don't chatter about things of which you have no understanding. For a moment, the poor gardener was struck speechless at this quite unexpected and truly undeserved attack. Then, turning towards the two young men who were glaring at him, he replied quietly, "If I had had your opportunities and your education, or if I even had had your father-in-law as you have to support me, I too could have had a decent education, and perhaps I would even have become a greater scholar than either of you. For what, in fact, do you know? For all your education, you have no understanding of essentials. Why, I myself heard thereof say that good deeds were more important than learning." And warming up to his subject, he added, "I was only 9 years old when I lost both father and mother. On top of the great tragedy of becoming a total orphan, it meant that I had to begin to work to earn my living even at that tender age, though I loved so much to learn. Ever since, I've had to toil without end to make ends meet. And despite very little free time, I still manage to study Chumash very thoroughly and know all the Tehillim by heart. I wonder how you two would have fared under such circumstances." The two sons-in-law became absolutely incensed at what they considered sheer chutzpah on the part of the gardener, daring to speak to them in this fashion. There would have been a real row had not the smith, for the sake of peace, hurried out of the house together with his neighbor. "You ought to be ashamed of yourselves," burst out Yitzchok Shaul, who had entered and taken in what had taken place. "In the first place, you cannot term Ezra Yehuda to be an Amoritz, an ignoramus, when he knows Chumash and Tehillim. And in any case, how can you be so mean as to attack him for no reason at all?" Yitzchok Shaul said a good deal more to them in the same vein, showing that he too could get into a temper when justifiably aroused. Baruch saw the wide gap between the paths of the two elder son-in-laws and that of the youngest. His impression was enhanced by an occurrence which took place in the shul at the Bromzel on Shabbos HaGodol. The Maggid was Reb Shlomo, the husband of Rav's granddaughter, the old Rav having become paralyzed just before Shabbos HaGodol, as we told last week, and having requested that Reb Shlomo give the drosha in his stead. This Reb Shlomo was the son of Avram ben Yomin, who earned his living by combing and brushing wool, which made him a rich man. Reb Shlomo was a brilliant Talmud Chochem, but nobody liked him because he was so conceited, always advertising his scholarship and even comparing himself at every opportunity with the greatest scholars in history. "Yes," he used to say when referring to such sages as Rashi Rabbi Tam, with whose opinion he might differ, "they have their point of view, but I have mine." The ordinary people in the community, hearing him talk this way, were very impressed, for they thought, "There goes a great scholar." But many of his more scholarly listeners just fumed at his boastful attitude. No sooner had Reb Shlomo stepped onto the beam in front of the Aron Kodesh than his arrogance made itself felt. Whereas the old Rav used to approach his drasha with a sense of humility, first kissing the peroiches, murmuring a short prayer under his breath, then speaking with a sense of responsibility and sincerity which was unmistakable, Reb Shlomo just drew himself up to his full height, threw a contemptuous glance at the old shamash as he called for his talis and ordered him to announce to the congregants that he would tolerate no yawnings from ignorant people who did not know enough to appreciate a scholarly sermon. Most of the people present resented the fact that Reb Shlomo was going to preach in place of their old beloved Rav, who had ministered to their spiritual needs for the past 60 years. But no one dared utter the word of protest. For had not the Rav himself stated it to be his wish that the former, that means Reb Shlomo, should preach this Shabbos HaGodol? The Pshlema's sermon was in truth a very scholarly one, but as soon as he began to follow his usual custom of blowing his own horn and speaking about himself as if he were on a par with our sages of old, up jumped Chaim Shimon and shouted out that Pshlema should not be allowed to continue with his sermon, for he was wanting in respect towards our great Torah scholars. Rav Shlomo's face changed color as a great commotion arose in the Beis HaMedrash. He began shouting from the bima that Chaim Shimon should be thrown out of the Beis HaMedrash and put into Chelem. He should be excommunicated for his chutzpah. The leaders of the community, with the dying Rav Moshe at their head, intervened and restored order and quietness so that Rav Shlomo could continue. But there was an uneasy undercurrent to the atmosphere which was felt by all. The Smith's two older son-in-laws, as might have been expected, were on the side of Rav Shlomo, and indignantly decried the chutzpah of Chaim Shimon in having dared to make his attack on the scholarly preacher. But Yitzchak Shaul, on the other hand, supported Chaim Shimon, saying that in her case, such a balgaiva, such a conceited person as Rav Shlomo would have been dealt with in a different way. He told them of an occasion when a certain young scholar arrived in Harki, bearing testimonials from the Goyim in Vilna and Brisk. His purpose in coming was to preach to the Jews of Harki, and in fact they all flocked to hear the brilliant young man about whose learning they had heard so much. His sermon, related Yitzchak Shaul, ran along the same lines as that of Rav Shlomo. That is to say, he boasted of his vast knowledge of the Torah and of his opinions, which he compared with those of the greatest scholars in Jewish history. Everyone listened to his discourse without interruption, but he was soon made to see the error of his ways. As soon as it became dark, just before the termination of Shabbos, he found himself being dragged into a small room in the Beis HaMedrash, and he received such carcass that he remembered it for a long time. He could not see who had done it, but he knew there were several young men who were dealing with him so thoroughly. Neither could he identify anyone by voice, as none of them uttered a sound. As soon as he found himself alone, he picked himself up gingerly and went in search of the Rav to tell him of the wicked assault upon his person. The Rav listened to his story and then said, "That which you received, the carcass, the klep, must have been sent as a punishment to you for having spoken so lightly and disrespectfully when mentioning our great Torah scholars. And that is the way we ought to deal with this Rav Shlomo," concluded Yitzchak Shaul. "Then he would learn the same lesson as that young preacher about whom I have just told you." Yitzchak Shaul's brothers-in-law took no notice of his remarks, but Baruch felt an even closer bond with his friend than before. What a wonderful approach to reality was Yitzchak Shaul's, and this approach was a Hasidic one. This attitude became of the greatest importance to Baruch in his search for the truth. More of Baruch's discoveries, Emir Tzashem, in the next installment.